That is the... rollout and consideration of the committee bill, which is in document form PM110 in our packet. And there are three major articles in the bill. House File Article 1, which is House File 2882, which is the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and the Sard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council's recommendations to the legislature. Article 2 is House File 3502, which is dedicated primarily to the clean water and the issues remaining in the Clean Water Fund, appropriations that has money from the 2008 appropriations left to be recommended. And House File 3258, which has to do with audits. There are some other technical corrections in the bill, and carry an amendment about carryover funds that was the Outdoor Heritage Fund, the Parks and Trails Fund, the Clean Water Fund had the carryover authorization already. The Arts and Culture History did not, and the libraries in particular needed to have that language, because all of their money was not expended in a timely basis, primarily because they were asked to hold up the money when we got in that little deficit problem with the state. And so they were not awarding new funds, but we're saying that they had funds left over from the 2010 year, it can be spent in the 2011 year. This year, if you remember, we had three major things to do. We had and critical things to do, and our biggest task was at the beginning was to make recommendations for the bonding projects across the state and maximize non-state matches and recommit bonding projects that would be have statewide significance and would be the financial basis for some of the decisions that we have to make today. And we made good ones, and they were passed. And in the case of the one that we discussed yesterday, the RIM, then this is the only money left. And so that creates still and the need for discussion on what is supplanting and what is supplementing. That being said, I think I'm going to go forth with the idea that this discussion has to take place as we move along with the whole body and of the House of Representatives, and then with the representatives of the Senate who are on this conference, who become part of the conference committee, because it still isn't clear enough in my mind. Last month, we heard from the state agencies and our accounts and jurisdiction and got a full understanding of what our budget cuts were, and we developed a plan to make serious cuts that affected all Minnesotans. But our current challenge is to bring forth for the full legislature's approval the expenditure of the funds from the 3/8 dedicated sales tax that people of Minnesota voted in 2008 by 56% to tax themselves for outdoor heritage, to have clean water, and enhance our parks and trails, and to have a fund for creative activities and arts and culture and history. We have always been guided from the very beginning of our discussions in 2009 by the Constitution. And in this year, in addition to the Constitution, language that the people voted for, our main concern has been following the law in Chapter 172, which was enacted last spring. And I would like to remind to all the members of the committee that 5 senators and 5 House people representing our bodies signed Chapter 172, signed the bill that became Chapter 172. 5 people in the Senate signed, 5 people in the House signed. What we have today isn't nearly what we had last year, and I'm very glad about that. We have made significant progress. One of the things that we made significant progress that doesn't seem to have caught the banner of outside groups particularly was the legislative guide to lay down some basic principles and outcomes of what future legislatures should think about when they have decisions to make about the constitutional amendment funds for appropriations for the 4 funds. It seems that we're standing alone, but I bet that even though we are standing alone in approval of the legislative fund, I bet that the Senate is sneaking a peek at it. And I bet the Lasard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council is reading it from cover to cover. But until we get immediate feedback, other than what we received in this committee, we're just going to let it sit there and its little buff coloration and see what happens. But I think that this committee can take pride in the time that they spent on that document. And it is on the website, and there are people in that, I don't know, that, what is it called now, surf the network and come across it. And I think it's grabbing from people that have mentioned it to me. I saw that thing on my screen. That's an interesting bunch of thoughts. So I think maybe we're going to be talking about that again in the future. It's important to note that in document PM110 that Article 1 reflects all of the funding levels recommended by the Lasard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council. All of the funding levels that were recommended, Representative Hansen, by the council members are in the document at the same level that you brought them to us. The only changes that are being made are technical policy changes that incorporate some of the suggestions that were made orally, and then there were nods and smiles, and sure, we can do that during the testimonial period and during the questioning period when they were brought to the attention. We included only the issues that were informally agreed to by the members and the presenters in document PM 110. I do want to tell the people in the audience that yesterday afternoon, Representative Morgan and I and Ms. Conley met with the Republican members of the committee and went over the document very briefly and went over the proposed amendments very briefly. I also want to tell the members of the committee that after session yesterday, there was a brief meeting of the Democratic members of the committee where we went over the document PM 110 and the proposed amendments that I mentioned to the Republicans, I mentioned to the Democrats. The document PM 110 was posted yesterday afternoon, and so the public had the opportunity to read it if they were tuned in to our website. The issues that we formally agreed to that were put into the document 110 address the delegation of power issue on the provisions dealing with or successor. We added current conservation science in three places, so that we use consistent terminology. In the document PM 110, we are making it clear that selecting the highest quality programs and using established criteria is the top priority in making grants. And when other things are equal, other criteria can be established. In the document, we are ensuring that DNR, Department of Natural Resources, provides sign-off to land purchases and permanent easements in writing. And we recognize that sometimes projects that include both acquisition and enhancement and restoration may require more time than is granted. So we extend the time that funding is available to accomplish the enhancement restoration. And there is an additional amendment that Representative Morgan is going to offer that will clean that intention up. On behalf of the committee, I would like to thank Dr. Kilgore and Mr. Becker for your patience and for your responsiveness to our concerns, and Mr. Becker especially for his assistance in crafting the appropriate language when we consulted with him. Thank you for your help. Representative Morgan, I would like to have PM 110 before the committee for consideration for passage.
Madam Chair, I'll move PM 110 for consideration for passage.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The document PM-110 is before us. Representative Morgan, you have 2 minutes.
I do, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. I guess I would first like to move the PM-A-42 amendment in members' packets.
Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, the PM-A-42 addresses that issue that you mentioned there at the end, the concern that restoration enhancement projects of prairies in particular really take 4 years to do the job right. And if we are going to allow until 2013 for these projects to get started, we really need to allow 4 years after that. So line 1.3 of the amendment addresses the issue of four years after acquisition, whichever is later, essentially taking it out possibly to 2017 if the restoration or enhancement begins in 2013, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? If not, all in favor of adopting A-42, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted. A-42 is included. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The PM-A-43 amendment, I'll move that next. It's also in members' packets. The PM-A-43 amendment makes 6 additional changes that all came about as a result of the testimony and conversations we had with Representative Hansen, Dr. Kilgore, Chair of the Lasard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, and Mr. Becker, the Executive Director. I'll talk briefly about the 6 amendments and the issues that they address. The first, actually it's a single amendment, but the 6 pieces that they address. On the first change would be on lines 1.2 and 1.3. This changes the match for Conservation Partners grants from 10% to 20%. This is a prospective change. It's not affecting anything in this bill for this year. It would be for projects considered after July 1 of this year. So for the next round, the match on the the Conservation Partners grants will go to 2010. The next three lines, 1.4 to 1.6, are the next change. This change, we think it's important in the conversations and certainly in the intent, we believe, of the constitutional amendment that restoration and enhancement projects should be done on public lands, not on private lands. And these lines in the bill seem to provide a possible exception to that idea or concept. So this would remove the possibility of an exception and make sure that all projects funded by the Legacy Amendment would be done on public land. The next two lines, 1.7 and 1.8, clarifies that conservation easements must be permanent. The next change is the much larger change to statute, the Subdivision 8 land management option. This addresses the concerns that many folks have expressed, not only in conversations as Representative Hansen was presenting House File 2882, but also in other hearings that we have had before this committee about the ongoing management costs of land that is purchased or permanently eased by funds from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. This would make sure that there is a proposal brought to the legislature from the Lasard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council that addresses these issues, these ongoing issues. This does not change any of the proposals in this year's package. It won't even affect proposals in the next round. What it will do is ask the Lasard-Sams Council during their next round of consideration of proposals to be developing a list of proposals that we might consider as a legislature to address these issues for the long term, and if adopted by the legislature, they would be put in place for projects from July of 2011 onward. On the back side of the amendment, there are still two more changes. At the top of the second page, lines 2.1 to 2.3 deals with lands in the public domain, and it simply says that into the future, again, it does not affect any of the projects in this year's proposal, but into the future, no funds appropriated from the Outdoor Heritage Fund shall be used to purchase any land if the land is fully or partially owned by the state of Minnesota or a political subdivision thereof. In other words, we should not be using public money to buy land that is already in the public domain. And then finally, the last change recommended in this amendment is on restoration audits. This will provide for a mechanism to fund an independent analysis conducted by the legislative auditor at the direction of the audit commission that will look into the satisfaction of restoration goals and objectives for projects funded through the legacy amendment, as well as other areas, for instance, the Clean Water Fund, the Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund, bonding, and make sure that those goals are being accomplished. So that is the amendment, and I will stand for questions.
Is there any comments or discussion on the 843 amendment? If not, all in favor of adoption of 843, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted. Amendment 843 will be included in the document PM 110. Is there any Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I do have a question on Subdivision 9 on that amendment.
What page?
2.14 line on the amendment. Accomplishing restoration goals. Who sets those goals?
The funds?
On line 2.14.
Yes, the funds.
Yes.
Those
are those the guide?
The Outdoor Heritage Fund for the people that are in the Outdoor Heritage Council, the Clean Water, the people that are appropriating the money for the Clean Water Fund, the people that are appropriating the money for the Parks and Trails Fund, people that are appropriating the funding for the Arts and Culture and History Fund. And I would expect that this will become part of their 25-year strategic plans that they are in the process of bringing together and presenting at our for the legislature's approval in 2011.
Madam Chair?
Representative Erdahl.
What impact would the legislative guide have on those goals? Will that have any impact?
Through osmosis, Representative Erdahl. The legislative guide is the first document that's finished that has principles and outcomes in them. And so I would think that even if they unconsciously it might have some impact, but there is no enforcement in any way or nothing in the legislative guide that demands anybody follow anything. Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, and maybe following up on Representative Erdahl's question, would that also mean, say, if there is a project proposer that's received an appropriation and the purpose and the objective of their project is to do restoration, and through the council having the accomplishment plans, they could define what the restoration goals and objectives are, So there would be details, there are measurement possibility, responsibility on the project managers. Would that be, to take it down to the actual project level?
Morgan?
Hold on to this, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, Representative Erdahl, I think that's true. We heard from the Lesage-Sams After Heritage Council when they were with Representative Hansen up there. Each of these projects that they propose requires an accomplishment plan, and those accomplishment plans set out certain goals and objectives and outcomes and so forth. And I would imagine that the legislative auditor would base their audit on the stated goals of the plan. And I think the same is true in the Parks and Trails Fund and the Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund and so forth. I think these projects individually state their own goals. We approve them based on an agreement with those stated goals and so forth. And then the legislative auditor would provide the oversight independently to make sure that those goals are being met.
Any other comments or discussion? Mr. Soderberg, there's a spreadsheet that we would like to include our company PM 110 as amended. Would you like to explain?
Madam Chair, members, I'll be very brief since I think most of you are familiar with the layout and kind of how it the spreadsheet flows. But as you mentioned, Madam Chair, the spreadsheet shows a comparison between the Outdoor Heritage Council for Article 1 and the House. The governor didn't weigh in on it, and he didn't last year either as to with any recommendations for that fund. And as you can see, reflecting the fact that the bill has the same funding levels as the Outdoor Heritage, on the comparison column on the far right, there's no differences all the way through. And if you look on page 3, it kind of gives you a synopsis of what the fund will look like after this year. It shows you the prior year carry forward, the amount of the forecasted receipts, and the appropriations. And as you can see, in fiscal year 11, looking at the available funds discounted for the appropriations made in this bill, as well as the $18 million that was made last year for the Forest for the Future program, there'll be about $9.7 million in a balance in that fund as we move forward. That's with the forecast, the latest numbers we have now. So you can see that the resources looking out for the next year based on the forecast that we have now will be in the neighborhood of about $183 million for the next biennium. Moving on to the Clean Water Fund, you'll notice that, again, now we have the governor as the comparison because he did weigh in on some recommendations. And on the far right-hand column, the blank shows that there was no House companion, or the House did not adopt the governor's recommendation, and it just shows the flow of the dollars in the bill, what the purpose is, and the differences between the House and the governor, or at least PM 110 as amended in the governor. And again, there's a synopsis of the fund status reflecting what the bill and what the resources, projected resources going forward to FY 12 and 13. On page 4, beginning on line 144, we just have the other provisions in the bill, and this is from Representative Wagenius's bill on the Metro Groundwater Monitoring, and that should be matching account, I think is the official name of that, is established. And as you know, there's a fee imposed. It shows the flow of money, the projected flow of money. And in this case, these are revenue amounts expected to be raised from the new fee that is in the bill. And then finally, it's just that provision that is in Article 3 regarding the legislative auditor and paying for the audits that the legislative auditor would do. And in this case, this is kind of a misnomer because what this The governor didn't weigh in on this particular provision, but in law, I know the Outdoor Heritage Fund has a requirement for audit every 2 years, so this just is kind of showing what the law is saying we have to do, and shows the amounts that is expected to cost for the respective audits. And they'll be every other year, beginning in '11, with the two funds, the Outdoor Heritage Fund and the Parks and Trails Fund. '12 would then be the other two funds, the Clean Water Fund and the Arts and Culture Heritage Fund. And that's the synopsis of the bill.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Soderberg, just to double check, all funds would be treated the same in terms of audits?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Madam Chair, and Representative Hansen, all funds would be treated the same as far as audits, and this is financial audits. The restoration audit, you know, is a discretionary audit at the discretion of the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and the Legislative Audit Commission and Legislative Coordinating Commission. So, yes, they would be treated the same.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, the cycle would be every other year for the financial audits, the Arts Fund, Parks, Clean Water, and Outdoor Heritage would all be receiving financial audits to ensure the public accountability. And then for any restoration audits, they would have to be at the direction of the Legislative Audit Commission, which would have to provide in an open public meeting the support to the legislative auditor to conduct those restoration audits.
Mr. Soderberg.
Representative Hansen, members, and Madam Chair, that is true, and I think one of the things, the outstanding issue that's going to have to be resolved is paying for those audits, how that will come to pass. And at this point, it looks to me like unless there is action by the legislature to make that an open appropriation, kind of as they have with the financial audits, they'd have to come back and request money, a direct appropriation to pay for the audit out of the fund, the respective funds, or however they decide they would want to approach doing those audits.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, Mr. Soderberg, so the funds are all new, the Arts Fund, the Clean Water Fund, the Parks Fund, the Outdoor Heritage Fund. So auditing of them, if we have existing traditional funding for the legislative auditor that's provided through general taxpayers that existed prior to 2008, and then we add additional responsibility, if we have to tap into the general fund to do that, that's kind of reverse supplanting. It seems to be that we would be putting pressure on the general fund if the funds don't pay for the additional work that they are resulting in to cover their responsibility.
Any further discussion? Thank you, Mr. Soderberg. Any further discussion? Public testimony. Mr. Jess?
Good morning. My name is Tom Jess. I live in Plymouth. Congratulations. Thank you. Done very well. I just spent a little bit of time going through some things, and it's just informational things that I gave to Nancy as far as there's a history of the Protect, Enhance, and Restore that, and then having, you know, we heard the legislative auditor's report, and I just put together a little thing that showed the amount of acreage in the counties, the cultivated percentage in acres, and how much is in WMAs and their percentage. That's just informational, but again, and then that was an interesting work, but the figure that I'm holding just shows that those areas in yellow are less than 1% of the county areas in WMAs. The blue areas are 2% or less, and then the orange, there's only four counties that have 3% or less. And again, that's just something informational, but I think you've done a pretty good job. My only request as a citizen, and that's after having listened to last Wednesday's meeting when several of the members were asking about the process of the selection of the projects. I would encourage, I think, the members to just go to one or two meetings. I've been to two meetings of the Heritage Council and watched the selection process, and it's a very, very good process that they came up with. It's informative, and it's easy to follow along. So it's, you know, as far as the process, it's just as a citizen recommending to this committee that they actually go see what the LaSalle Council does, because they take in a lot of stuff, and they have to sort through a lot of information. So that's basically all I have. Thank you.
We appreciate that advice, Mr. Jess. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Davis.
Did Mr. Jess provide a copy of the map with the WMAs?
I can give that. It's not a map of the WMAs. It's just a map of the counties and by percentage. It's not, doesn't show the WMAs, but I can give this to...
Madam Chair, I'd be interested in getting a copy of that.
Okay. It'd be something to kind of follow along with the other.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Jess, as a citizen who's been in these meetings and followed the other meetings, are you happy that not one penny of the appropriations from the recommendations from the council have been changed by this committee?
Yes. I think that you know, when the citizen portion of the committee is appointed, I mean, part of their process is that they need to have a background in conservation, or what I call conservation, and it's, you know, I feel that they're taking a big burden off of this committee by being able to put their expertise to work and save you a lot of extra time. And I think it's something the Senate recognized it last year when they passed that bill 67-0. And, you know, there's going to be, you know, some disagreements. I see that more in the House than in the Senate, but I think that, you know, we've got a lot of people with a lot of expertise on the Citizens Council, and I think we should use that.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Jess, one of the amendments is giving a task to the council to come up with recommendations on the thorny issue of land management. And so based on what you just said, do you think the council is the best place to provide us with the legislature with a variety of options on how to deal with these land management issues?
Mr. Jess.
Madam Chair, it's Representative Hansen. I believe that actually if I were to make a recommendation, it would be both the council with input from the DNR and the Board of Soil and Water Resources, since those are the two main players where the funds are going with, you know, they've got the expertise that they can advise the council and, you know, make the best decision.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jess.
Thank you.
Jim Lyons. Welcome to the committee, Mr.
Thank you very
Lyons.
Much.
You've been a faithful attendee.
Other than during spring break when I went to Daytona.
Did you bring some pictures?
Yes, did you bring pictures?
No, but I can show you this suntan. No.
I don't want to
we'll
see
pass.
The white.
No. Yeah,
and not
it's real close to a tattoo that had too lit. Never mind. Anyway, good morning. Thank you for letting me address you. Some of the concerns, particularly with this bill and observing how this has all gone on for the last 2 years now, I'm personally very impressed with the flow and the concern and sincerity that you've put towards this process. This committee has been charged with a very unique task. We, the citizens of Minnesota, contracted with you by direct vote to allocate a certain amount of funds. This should be done with the most openness and straightforwardness as can be provided. This is a unique group of money that you have to allocate. This is not general funds. It's special money that we allocated to you. Some of the concerns that I have seen come up, and first of all, Representative Morgan, your litmus test that you keep bringing up all the time is most appreciated about whatever the project is, protect, enhance, and restore, and also the substitute or supplant. And bringing that up repeatedly as you go through this process is most appreciated. Transparency in this whole process seems to be one that you're working for, and I would like very much for you to incorporate something that prevents, as we heard on Monday, the bus trip that doesn't meet the open meeting requirements, some exemption that was requested. I don't think that should be part of this money. Whether you do that in the general fund money, different issue. But this money should be open to the public since we directly advised you to spend the money. The rest of the money, different issue. As far as this particular bill goes, I'm very much glad to see that you removed the word successor. In my world, in business, in a partnership, if one partner leaves, those assets go back to the other partner or there's an arrangement made. It's not the partner that's leaving that gets to decide who the next partner is, from my world. And I don't think that should be part of this process. The one that concerned me after the discussion yesterday, on Monday, was in the wetlands for about $6.5 million, where you're using money from another fund and you're using money from some type of state appropriation that fell through, but yet you still want the $6.5 million. In my world, when I went to my boss in January and had a budget made for $6.5 million, and come March, I didn't meet whatever the goal was, I didn't get the bonus. So I'm concerned that this group, that there's enough direction as to what the criteria is that you're going to use at the time the legislature votes on this bill. Not $6.5 million. There's no foundation under this anymore. Just like with the State Arts Board, there's a question as to whether it'll even exist. But the grant program has a 4% administrative fee, as written in here. But yet, you've indicated there's a 1% administrative fee to be applied. And again, the money is different now than it was in January, when $600,000 in this bill, but that's not what you've got now for 1%. There's no reason these numbers can't be changed at the time the legislature votes on that number. I agree that, you know, you need something in there, but you don't, if you're going to say 1%, make it 1%, whatever that is, or 5%, but make it whatever you say it is. On a contract basis, you've indicated that there will be a 5% holdback. That's not enough, because if you gave me a contract and I knew there was a 5% holdback, I'd just jack the price up and make it 105%. And if I completed the job or not, I still get my money. Make it painful enough so that I do complete the job, 25% or something. I know in pouring concrete, there's always a holdback for time of curing. And if it cracks or it doesn't settle, I don't get my money. same thing should apply here. On page 13, it talks about reimbursement for the council. There's no provision in here to stop you from... some years back, we had an incident with a politician out in San Diego playing golf on public time and public fund. There's nothing in here that prevents that from happening. There's no reason that they have to have a temptation like that. If a per diem and mileage is good enough for legislatures, it should be good enough for these for the council. So I'd love to see you put some kind of restriction in here to remove that temptation of doing something other than... The other one that's of interest to me, out on the DNR website, there's land for sale. There are 26 parcels of land for sale from the DNR. And at the same time, this bill is now going to buy a considerable amount of more land. We already own 20% of the land in the state. Why do we need more? And particularly in Dakota County, there's approximately $2 million for land. Well, there are two parcels in Dakota County for 40 acres each with a minimum bid of $2.5 million. Now, if we're buying more land in Dakota County, why are we selling land in Dakota County? I'm not sure that that's the kind of business sense that my boss would go for. But anyway, those are my comments, and I really appreciate the time and the effort that you put into this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lyon. Don't run away. There might be questions.
About the tattoo?
I don't think so. Oh.
Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is not a question, Mr. Lyon, so much as to bring up a point that he mentioned, and I'm sure Representative Howells and others of us, along with Mr. Lyon, are appreciative that the successor language was taken out. Just wondering, on page 20, line 2031, where it says the Outdoor Heritage Council or its successor, was it intentionally left there?
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, it was intentionally left there because the Outdoor Heritage Council is a creature of legislature by statute, and only we can create a successor. And in that case, then, we're not subject to an outside group deciding to change itself and then changing the terms of the deal. We would change the deal. So it kind of has a different purpose and function.
Okay, I just wanted the clarification.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Lyon. I just want to thank you for providing detailed, thoughtful input. It's too bad the reporters have left to go write their story and not hear what you had to say, because much of the debate, and there was debate in the press again this morning, is framed in a black and white, good guy, bad guy type of thing. And you as a citizen and Mr. Jess before you have come here and provided input in an open forum, which is available to anybody in the room. Anybody can come down here and provide input. And you've been here and you've watched. And you've watched the work that the committee has done on a bipartisan basis, day in, day out. You know, a lot of stamina that you've provided. But you've come back and you've taken the opportunity to give us very detailed, specific, thoughtful items. And I can't speak for the whole committee, but I think that's excellent. And it's the type of thing that we look for. This is an open process. We want to hear from people. It's just the best about Minnesota when folks like yourself, Mr. Jess, come forward and provide us with what you've provided us. And we will take it to heart in the next 24 hours.
And Mr. Lyons, when you were talking about the wetlands and the money that is in our bill, the $7 million or close to it, for the wetlands, for the river project, projects, were you talking about the RIM projects and the supplanting? That the money that's in this bill, did you think that that was supplanting the RIM projects then because they were the $25 million was vetoed in the bonding bill?
Yes. The testimony that was given here on Monday indicated that the $6.5 million or $7 million was based on some money to be coming from the Clean Water Fund and also some money coming from some other legislative source. As Representative Morgan had said, that sounds like double dipping. I'm using money out of another fund to get money out of the second fund, but if I don't get the money out of the first fund, I still want the money from the second fund. My boss wouldn't go for that.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just, as far as the planting goes, I don't know how one can possibly consider, because the governor vetoed the $25 million, that that's supplanting, because that money was never there. You can't supplant something that was never there. So I don't know how anyone could consider that a $25 million. I mean, I wish you would have left the $25 million in. I support support that project. But clearly that's not supplanting, because you can't supplant something that's not there. So just for the record.
But Representative Davis, historically, it's been there since the beginning of the program.
Well, Madam Chair,
either through appropriation in the Environment Committee or in appropriation in the Bonding Committee.
Okay. It gets back to the debate, doesn't it?
It does.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I'm willing to continue on with that debate and get more input into it, because it's a quandary that we...
Did you see a light bulb going on?
Yeah, I did.
Doesn't happen that often.
Any other questions of Mr. Lyon? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to... give input on PM 110 as amended? Thank you. Because of the brief time this has been before us, and because it is a committee bill, we have had the final vote posted as taking place tomorrow morning. And as people are reading through this today, carrying it close to their hearts and discussing it over their morning coffee break and noon lunch, if you come up with any changes of technical nature or a major change that you really want us to consider, please have it submitted to Ms. Anton or Ms. Conley before 4 o'clock today. We will not have any more public testimony today, tomorrow. We will just have the bill before us as amended in its finest glory to vote on tomorrow. Is there any further discussion on PM 110? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you want us to continue discussion today, or do you want us tomorrow before we vote?
We can do both.
Well, then, I have questions.
All right, let's hear them.
Thank you.
Talk about them.
One, and I just want a clarification on a definition. I've been told in the past that the word perpetuity actually had a number to it. I mean, does someone know? I mean, perpetuity from, you know, Commissioner Meyer or somebody, anyone? What is perpetuity?
Mr. McCormick, Ms. Taylor, Mr. Shepherd.
Very long
Madam Chair, it depends on the context of the word is used. In this case, for example, when the requirement is stated that an easement must be in perpetuity, it would mean that when you negotiate that easement, you can't have an end date, can't have a time at which the easement ceases to operate. I think that that's a condition that would be placed on the people negotiating the easement.
Is that okay?
Mr. Hanson.
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, Mr. Jashke is here from the Board of Water and Solar Resources. If you may be able to answer the question in relation to the easements on practice.
Mr. Jashke. You always give us good information. Tell us about perpetuity.
Madam Chair, members, John Jashke, Director of Board of Water and Solar Resources. The term is used in our easements, you know, the contract that we sign between the state and the landowner, and it's you know, in different places over the years they've used perpetual, permanent, perpetuity. They all mean the same thing, and that is that the easement never expires. It's there as long as people are there to enforce and abide by the conditions, and as long as that property has the ability to have that condition placed upon it, it'll be there. And that's about the best answer I can give you without bringing in perhaps a group of lawyers to debate this in front of you.
We have our crack research staff. And
you do.
That's the best we can do.
Yep. You've done very well.
So perpetuity lasts beyond one landowner.
Madam Chair, members, yes, the easement carries forward regardless of the ownership. It's a condition of that property. So if it's bought, sold, subdivided, all those things, that permanent protection for those conservation conditions will be in place. I should point out that there's a management plan that goes with each of these easements, which describes the details of the conditions that must be met. There is some ability to amend that management plan if conditions arise, but it does not in any way allow the conservation benefits to be depreciated or reduced.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Minister. So basically, it's forever unless we change it.
Yeah.
Mr. Jashke. Unless the property changes.
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, I guess the we is what I would ask you to define more carefully, because certainly that is a contract that is in place that I suppose can be altered. I'm not exactly sure of all the ways that it can be. The state of Minnesota would have to agree to the conditions to make the alterations. That's correct.
Representative Haas.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl, I actually think what you said is a fairly good definition. It is forever unless it's changed. So it does take a physical change to break it, and it cannot be an informal change. It has to be a legal change. I broke this a couple times as park director, but we had to come to the state to break them. Okay, so we did break them, but it was not a casual or informal breaking, but it was an end and a change of the contract. But we actually had to come and ask permission from the state of Minnesota to break those contracts.
Mr. Jashke.
And Madam Chair and members, in our case, we have about 5,000 or approximately a little over conservation easements, and none of them have ever been undone. As Representative House points out, there are cases where there's slight amendments for conditions that change, and what we have to do then is negotiate a repayment or a transfer. Sometimes we just add property in one place by subtracting in another, so they're amendable. But those are, yes, the state has to approve those agreements. And we have to, of course, get the party who is on the other side to agree to that, so it takes a deal to be made. But the underlying parameters of the easement are always intact.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That ends my question on perpetuity, but I'd like to continue along another question.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Jashke?
Madam Chair, just one more point. You know, there are cases where we also have permanent conservation easements on public land, because public land can be transferred or the uses of it, you know, adjusted over time. And so the two aren't exclusive, and sometimes they are together, not always, but on a few occasions we have easements of various kinds, including conservation easements on public lands, because they are obviously available for sale in certain cases. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shasky. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. Under the clean water portion, on page 28, a question that I have. Now, I guess I felt basically we were spending money here, and this is a fee increase that affects, you know, these counties under the I'm looking at lines 28 to 23 28.29, and the I'm concerned about the effect that this may have on agriculture in these counties, particularly Wright County that I represent a portion of, and just wondering, I guess from Representative Vulginius, do you have any idea how much money this will generate and what the impact will be on agriculture?
Representative Vulginius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first to say why the fee is here. And, you know, just as we talked about matching funds for the outdoor heritage and said it should go from 10% to 20%, when we have done all of our Bowser money, you know, and we put a lot of money out to Bowser to send mainly outstate, it said folks out there had to provide matching funds. So with all of this heritage money, clean water money, we've had matching funds. And so when we are working in the metropolitan area, particularly looking at something like an aquifer or a great big piece, there are no political jurisdictions that cover the Mount Simon-Hinckley aquifer, to be blunt about it. I mean, there's not a political line. There's nothing we can use. So we can't say to the local unit of government, the Mount Simon-Hinckley aquifer, please pay in your fair share for a matching fund. So because of that, we had to do that in statute. And so what we're providing is this metropolitan area's matching fund for this well system. So that is the why that we're doing it. In terms of agriculture, I mean, I think of farmers in two, I mean, half of agriculture in Minnesota is folks with rental land, and they may not be thinking about their grandchildren and whether their grandchildren will have water on the land, but half of agriculture is, you know, owned by the person who's actually farming it. And those folks, just like folks in Bloomington or folks in Woodbury, are going to want to know, that farmer's going to want to know, that when I hand off that land to my grandson or my granddaughter, there's water there, so this is still farmable land. So I don't think farmers are being penalized in any way. We all need to know that there's going to be water under our land for use as drinking or for agriculture in the future. So perhaps that helps you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The fee, I mean, who actually, I mean, does the farmer pay the fee directly, or does the county pay the fee?
It would
Representative
be.
Representative Guinness.
In this case, it's whoever has the wells over a certain size pay the fee. So in Edina, it's going to probably be the city of Edina's water, whatever they have there, whoever does their water wells, they'll pay the fee. To the farmer, because it's the farmer who has the well, that farmer will pay the fee. Okay. It's the person who has the well over a certain size.
Okay, thanks.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Vulginius, that answers that question for me. And the other, I don't know if we want to get into today, but at some point, as I indicated before the meeting, you know, the supplanting and the substituting definition, I think we have to answer. You know, looking at the TMDLs, I know that that's been a ongoing, and we haven't had enough money to do it. And so Minnesota has been making incremental progress in doing TMDLs for our lakes and streams and rivers. But now I see we have in this $18 million to do it, and that's great. And we're making big, much more progress. But is it supplanting? Is it substituting? This is just one example, but I think somehow we need for the future to figure this out.
Representative Torkelson. Just a minute before we start on you. Representative Erdahl, but the $18 million was the appropriation we made last year. Yeah. And so we're waiting to hear the results of that money, too. Representative Erdahl.
Yes, Madam Chair, yes. I understand that, but before we ever gave any money, this was a program that was, you know, it was ongoing. It's just a question that I'm raising.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hansen.
Okay.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I thought it was on that point. Please.
My question regarding this fee and the account that it's going into is more a question of why it's appropriate that this committee would have it in this committee's bill. It seems to me it deals only with DNR, if I'm reading it correctly, a fee that they're going to collect and deposit in an account that's set up under DNR's jurisdiction, and I just have a little trouble figuring out why it's part of this bill, and I'm sure Representative Wagenius will inform me in detail.
Because it ensures clean water from the Clean Water Fund eventually. Representative Wagenius?
We're taking $5 million from the clean water and putting it into this account. And the matching fee, they go in the same account, and they're all to buy a wells that will test the water in the metropolitan area, but not really in the metropolitan area, in the Mount Simon, sure, Hinckley area, to make sure that we have drinking water way into the future. Very hard for legislators to do really long-term things. And so I've run into stumbling blocks on this one because it is looking out for your grandchildren and my grandchildren, and that's just a tough nut for us to crack. But the reason this particular thing is in this bill, it's because it marries up. It's the matching fee for clean water money, and the clean water money is in this account. It's matching fee, and clean water is our jurisdiction.
Representative Torkelson.
I understand that, Representative Wagenius, and by the way, I don't have any grandchildren yet, so.
But you will.
I hope you're right. I hope you're clairvoyant in that perspective.
But
I really don't, you know, we have jurisdiction over the clean water funds that are generated by the 3/8 of a cent sales tax, and we take those, we decide where those funds will go. And in this case, $5 million of those funds are proposed to go to this project that will be under the jurisdiction of the DNR. I still don't understand why this fee and the fund are part of our committee's bill. It's not necessary.
Representative Martinez.
It is because it is the match fund for...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but we appropriate lots of matching funds.
We did interrupt you.
I'm sorry. We appropriate lots of matching funds to various accounts in various agencies within the state government. Why is this particular matching fund being brought into our bill to become, you know, what I'm afraid of is setting precedent again. We're setting a precedent here that I believe may be inappropriate to include this DNR fund in our bill. It just doesn't sit right with me.
Can I
Representative Wagenius?
Here's my dilemma. because I am a metropolitan person. If I had said, I want $5 million of clean water money for the metropolitan area, and there was no match, you guys in Greater Minnesota should have gigged me and said, hey, that's not fair. That's not fair. You're taking $5 million of the clean water money without a match. So, you know, it's one of those catch-22 situations. And in fairness, I tried to solve the problem. That's all that's going on here.
Representative Torkel.
Madam Chair, well, it seems to me that this fee and fund should be established through your committee, the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, as part of DNR, and then we should decide whether or not the Clean Water Fund should make an appropriation to this fund. I still don't get it why it's part of our bill. And I would move to remove that section.
Representative Torkelson moves.
Starting on line 26.31 through 29.4.
Will you restate that, please? Restate your motion.
Starting with line 26.31 and going through to line 29.4.
Further discussion.
Madam Chair, I would just add that this does not delete the appropriation that we're making, right?
That's correct. It does
it's
not.
Just taking out the language that, in my mind, should be properly included in some other committee's bill.
Any further discussion? Representative Torkelson moves to delete section 5 on page 26, 27, 28, and section 6 on line page 28.
Did you do section
and 29.
Mm-hmm. You're doing section 6 too?
Is that correct, Representative?
Mm-hmm.
Section 5 and 6?
Mm-hmm. And Madam Chair, I'd request a roll call.
Any other discussion? Ms. Anden?
Representative Murphy?
No.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Davids?
Yes.
Representative Eakin?
No.
Representative Hausman? Representative Haas?
No.
Representative Howes? Representative Lilly?
No.
Representative Loeffler? Representative Mack?
Aye.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Representative Torkelson?
Yes.
Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Representative Wagenius?
No.
The amendment does not prevail. Representative David.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just looking into the future here a bit, and I know we don't bring in what the executive branch does or the Senate does into House discussions, but that being said, does the Senate in their bill, I don't know how far along they are on theirs, do they have any provisions with the fee here? Because I do agree with the Torkelson amendment, not because that fee shouldn't be there, but there shouldn't be a fee, but I don't think it should be in this bill either. So do we have any idea how we'd be matching up with the Senate? And if it's not there, can we still accomplish the same thing by going through the process? Representative Torkelson was suggesting that a bill come out of the Wagenius Committee to accomplish the same goal, because it's not so much the debate on what we're trying to do, but how we're trying to do it. And I'm just wondering how we're going to match up. Do we know how we're going to match up with the Senate? Are they going to have a hard line saying we don't want that fee in there, but we can still come back to the environment committees and take care of that? Do we have any idea on that?
Representative Genius.
First of all, this did come through the environment committee. You know, we do have multiple jurisdictions, and this did come through the environment committee, and it was voted on. The environment finance. I think the matchup with all of these bills is going to be just interesting because, and that's the only word I can find, because we're going to have real match problems just in general.
And Representative David, we haven't discussed it.
We don't know.
We don't know.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Wagenius.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 2 points. One, following up on Representative Verdahl's comment, until we adjourn, there's always a possibility of RIM being funded. You've got quite a few days left. So we could have hope there.
We can have hope.
Secondly, I have a question for Representative Morgan on the amendment. There was a description about public land, and I'm not sure if you were referring to all work being done on public land or where there's a public interest, because with the Reinvestment Minnesota program, that still remains private land, but the state has bought the public interest through the permanent easement. So there would still be private land conservation occurring where there'd be restoration. I'm just seeking some clarification on the intent there when you were introducing the amendment.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the portion of my A43 amendment that you're referring to, Representative Hansen, is Subdivision 9 about lands in public domain. I'll just go ahead and read the amendment. I think it addresses your concern. I read the portion of the amendment. No funds appropriated from the Outdoor Heritage Fund shall be used to purchase any land in fee title or easement if the land in question is fully or partially owned by the state of Minnesota or a political subdivision thereof. Is that the portion you're referring to?
I was looking in like 1.5 and 1.6 where you were mentioning.
Madam Chair.
Representative Morgan.
That section of the amendment refers to the language on page 18, lines 3, 4, and 5. Representative Hansen, the intent of that portion of the amendment was to require that all restoration and enhancement projects with money appropriated in this section must be on land permanently protected by a conservation easement or public ownership. Does that address your concern?
That does. Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, I just was going off of what you had said in the introduction, and if the language that retains in 18.3 to 18.8, it looks like it's clarifying, but that easements are still included, so that you would have private land that has a public interest, restoration still could occur on those.
Madam Chair, and I think that that accounts for that. We were just taking out, Representative Hansen, the exception, except as otherwise provided in this section. We didn't see any reason to have any additional exception.
Any further discussion? Any further questions? Okay, if there's any further amendments, they should be in by 4 o'clock. This committee will meet again in the morning in room 200 at 8:30 in the morning. Thank you. Room 200. This meeting is adjourned.